Recording live at Studio 710 in beautiful downtown Vancouver, you're listening to License to Chill with your host, Bert Hick of Rising Tide Consultants. On today's show, Bert welcomes Jeff Goddard, the Executive Director of the Alliance of Beverage Licensees, better known as ABLE-BC. With the addition of cannabis alongside alcohol in the recreational scene, Jeff joins Bert in studio to chat about what this will mean for the industry going forward and what the response has been so far in the urban and rural markets across British Columbia. We go now to Bert in conversation.
Okay, welcome to our podcast today. Our guest today is Jeff Goddard, Executive Director of the Alliance of Beverage Licensees for the province of British Columbia. Alliance of Beverage Licensees, or better known as ABLE, is an advocacy group for liquor license establishments that focus on the service of liquor. This includes liquor stores, private liquor stores, I should say, bars, pubs, nightclubs, and hotels, and they represent all establishments throughout the province of British Columbia. ABLE-BC is expanding into the cannabis business, and which represents an interesting new challenge for existing liquor establishments, but also new opportunities. Jeff also regularly puts on conferences and events and seminars. He's involved with, engaged with the government on a variety of issues, both in British Columbia and federally, but primarily the province of British Columbia. Jeff is from the Maritimes. He came to British Columbia. He's a big-time curler, and he just finished a tour around the province of British Columbia on his motorcycle. Did not get chased by a grizzly bear, but I do know he went last year to Hyder, Alaska, and got Hyderized.
Very true.
And Hyderized is something you'd have to come back to me and tell me about, but if you're going to go to the Hyder, you got to get Hyderized. And he has a certificate to prove it. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bert.
We are trying to, wanted to talk to you about a bunch of issues, but how did a boy from the Maritimes end up in British Columbia as Executive Director of the Alliance of Beverage Licensees?
Makes sense, right? You grew up in small town New Brunswick, and then you end up becoming a liquor lobbyist in British Columbia. I mean, I suppose, you know, New Brunswickers are renowned for their ability to chat a lot and to have the occasional drink. So from that perspective, it makes sense. But I ended up going to university in McMaster Universities in Hamilton, Ontario. So then it just almost threw a dart at the board and picked something that was outside of the Maritimes. And from there, I ended up eventually on Parliament Hill working for a few different members of Parliament. I spent about 8 years doing that. And Ottawa is a very cold city, like the temperature, very cold in the winter. And I heard about this mythical land of British Columbia where we kept the snow in the mountains in the winter and didn't allow it in the cities. And a friend of mine told me about this job. The position was available. I was looking for what was next. And went through the application process. Eventually, they made an offer, accepted it. And 2 weeks later, I was living in Vancouver. And that was 5.5 years ago. And I have to be honest, it's been fantastic. I love the industry. I love my job. I love that I get to meet, you know, fun, interesting people like yourself. And, you know, New Brunswick is wonderful, but, I feel like BC is my home now.
That's good. I did my undergraduate at Carleton University in Ottawa.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah. That's right.
And I still remember seeing the library at Carleton University in February, trying to figure out where to go for graduate studies. And I determined where I was going to go would be a hell of a lot warmer than Ottawa.
Yeah, you don't know what cold is until you go there.
Oh, God. It's tough on automobiles and brass monkeys. But anyway, now you've been with the Alliance of Beverage Licensees for
5.5 years.
5.5 years. Yeah. It's gone by in a heartbeat.
It has.
In terms of your organization, what are the major challenges facing the two major groups you represent, the pubs and the liquor stores?
Well, I will say part of the fun thing about my job, and every regulated industry has a guy like me, right? Whether it's new car dealers or construction industry or manufacturers or pharmacists, any industry that the business model incorporates the regulatory framework from government, you need to advocate on it because, I mean, once upon a time, it was illegal to sell alcohol on a Sunday in the province of British Columbia, as you well know, and organizations like mine go to government and say, come on, let us do it, and give them economic analysis and reasons and whatnot. But if you look at where we're at right now, people often talk about BC's antiquated liquor laws. I would extend that to say just liquor laws in general are fairly antiquated. In Canada, we came out of prohibition back pretty much 100 years ago, exactly. And everyone had slightly different ways of doing it in every particular province. Some are fully privatized, like Alberta. Some have quasi, you know, half and half systems like BC, which are both private and public. And then my home province of New Brunswick is fully government liquor stores and whatnot. But if you look at the way things have folded out right now, a number of those regulations are important pieces of our model, and a number of things are hindering the industry in some ways. So if I look at pubs, for example, two things that drive them absolutely crazy is they are legally forced to buy the vast majority of their products from government liquor stores, right? So they're a guaranteed customer base. There's, I think, 2,000 pubs, bars, nightclubs, liquor primaries in the province of British Columbia, and about 7,000 restaurants. The only place they can buy products is a government liquor store. And, I mean, there's some exceptions. They can buy directly from, like, craft breweries or local wineries, but most of their purchases have to come from there, even if the government store is closed, or they run out of vodka on a Friday night and they want to go to the private liquor store across the street. They're not allowed to do it. Even if the government store doesn't carry a particular product that they want, right? It's like some of the high-end tequilas or cognacs you'd find at a place like Legacy Liquor Store are not available at certain government stores. So that's really annoying, and it impacts consumers' choices as well, right? To add a bit of insult to that particular injury, they're also charged full retail price. I had a drink at a little hotel bar last night, and that bar does here in Vancouver, so it's a big place, probably does about $10 million a year of liquor purchases. They would pay the same amount per bottle that you or I would walking into a government store. Now, in fairness, I don't shop at government stores because that's a career-limiting move for the guy who represents private liquor stores, but those are two things that just don't really make any sense, and they're inefficient, and they're things we've been talking to government about for a long time. In fact, we have a meeting tomorrow to talk about this even further with government. Off the top of my head, those are a couple of things that are driving our members nuts.
So coming back to the meeting you're going to in Victoria and the advisory council, as I understand it, the government appointed Mark Hicken to do an inquiry into modernization of a liquor store, liquor licenses.
Yep, and he's a great guy too. Absolutely the right guy to help with this.
And I agree with you, he was the correct choice to do that. And this follows on a previous liquor policy review done by the BC Liberals.
Yes.
Mark put you guys all together, all the interest stakeholders within the industry, and sessions, and you came up with some recommendations. The
That's
government
right.
was seized with these recommendations, and they've accepted them, and now they're implementing them. So on the major recommendations of that report, one of which is licensee-to-licensee sales, and the other one is a wholesale pricing for licensee. What's the timing you think that'll happen?
Yeah, so I have no actual clarity on that because government has I'll give you a bit of background on it, right? So when Mark was brought on board to do this, the industry, all the industry associations that deal with liquor, just as you were saying, we got together, spent a week of our lives hashing it all out, and we came up with 24 recommendations, and I'm not going to call them like silver bullet solutions to fix the industry or anything like that, but things that would make the liquor industry work better and things that all of us believe are just, you know, their time has come, right? Things like licensee sales, hospitality discounts, fixing problems in the wholesale pricing system or the wholesale distribution system, I should say. And then government got that report from us in May of 2018. And in fairness, something else happened in October of 2018, which took up a lot of their resources. And it wasn't until we went back to them in May of this year, or a year later after they had the report, that I really feel like we were starting to make substantive progress. They'd only really done one of the recommendations during that period. And I get it. They were quite busy. But the meeting we have with government tomorrow is essentially to talk about the path forward on this. And government, the Attorney General specifically, was very clear with us. He's accepted the recommendations, and he's trying to move forward on all of them. There's some work to be done, obviously. So what he's done for us is all of us are getting together with his team in Victoria, is giving us access to senior staff, and we're going to figure out their concerns. We'll have to know how we think we can move forward on it. And I hope from there we'll be able to develop some sort of work plan to achieve the entire report, right? The report's recommendations are kind of woven together in such a way that you have to do all of them for them to actually make sense and work. You can't just like cherry pick a couple of them. So you're asking about a timeline. I mean, that's something I might have some more clarity on after that meeting tomorrow. I know that government is turning their attention to this report now, which is what we need. You know, talking about the previous government's report on, done by John Yap, it was frustrating about his process because they went out and took some meetings, and then one of their political staff members wrote a report. They came up with 73 recommendations that were like a sentence or two long. Then they had to go back out to industry to find out like how to make it work. But they implemented the heck out of that report, right? I mean, I didn't agree with all their recommendations, but they did 90% of it. This report, I think it's great. They had industry write it, right? The people who are literally representing the businesses who are in that industry. So I think the report is excellent. And so far they've implemented, you know, 1.5 of the recommendations, so, which is a better system, right? So,
yeah. It's our observation from being involved in the industry that the implementation of the recommendations from Mark's report has been delayed because of the October 18 issue, which is the legalization of cannabis and the branches.
And I buy that up until like January or February now, right? But it's September.
Yeah. Right. Time to move forward.
Yeah.
And time to get this thing going.
We're getting pretty frustrated.
Yeah. You know, there's an old saying in government, you never announce a commission study or review of something unless you know what the answers are going to be before you start. Because once you have the report in hand, the results of your study or your review, you have recommendations that you have to live with, but also you've raised expectations that you're going to do something about the issue. And that's where the government's at. 100%
agree. Yeah.
And that's where the government's at now. Now, with respect to the October 2018, and cannabis legalization, how do you feel that that's going to impact on the beverage licensee industry, pub industry, bar industry? We're probably about 5 months away from Canada, from edibles coming on stream.
Right.
How do you feel that this is going to play out? I know we've got some clients and some people who are in your industry, have liquor stores who've applied for retail cannabis stores, and some of them are moving through the process, but they'll have to be a separate store beside their liquor store. No connection at all. It's like a submarine with watertight compartments. And how do you see cannabis versus liquor, and how do you see this moving forward?
Yeah, it's an enormously complicated topic. And part of the challenge with it is no one actually knows, right? I mean, Canada's the first major country to go down this particular route. And I think whatever answer we come up with now is going to be very different in 5 years from now or 10 years from now when we sort out a lot of these issues. Government is having a hard time processing applications for retail licenses even, right? So one of the biggest impediments to the growth of this industry right now and a successful, competitive, innovative business environment is just simply getting a damn store open, right? And that's both on the provincial government and on like local municipalities. As you well know, the provincial government is they're the ones who issue the license, but they've abdicated a certain responsibility to local municipalities who may not even have the policy teams in place who can actually help come up with the frameworks of it. But I will say we know a couple of things. So if you look at other mature markets, and there's a study that was done a year or so in looking at counter sales in places in the United States that are legalized, and they show that alcohol and cannabis are typically substitutionary goods. So in economic terms, that simply means if you walk into, you walk out of your house with $20 in your pocket, you're typically either buying booze or buying weed. You're not buying necessarily both. Or if you are, you've already made that decision. So legalization may have a slight downward impact on the alcohol industry. But there's other complicating factors on that, right? So in other jurisdictions, you have things like consumption lounges, right? Or in Colorado, there's a place called the Coffee Joint where that serves coffee and cannabis. You can go in and consume on site. You're not allowed to do that in British Columbia. So you have to buy it online from government or through one of the 50-ish retail stores. And then you have to take it home or to some public space that's not zoned against it, right? Where you can go and do that. So I don't know. I mean, if you're looking for a social experience and you want to go to a bar, you're probably still going to go to a bar. When cannabis-infused beverages become legal and cannabis-infused or edibles and other things, you can anticipate that they will probably be sold by licensed non-medical cannabis retailers, right? I mean, I think there's a logic to selling it in other places, but I imagine that's what government's going to do. So that would be the same kind of scenario. Where are you going to consume that, you know, public spaces or at home? Does that mean you're not going to go out to a restaurant, or does that mean the restaurant's now going to be looking for other ways to incorporate their menu? I mean, I don't know if they'll be allowed even to serve it in their food, right? Or if they will eventually be able to serve a cannabis-infused beverage. And the technology on that is getting interesting. I mean, people are working hard to have cannabis-infused beverages look and feel a bit more like the experience of an alcoholic beverage, right? Because cannabis is a more complicated molecule, takes longer to get into your system, longer to process through. And what does that look like? You have one, and then you're done for the night. Or are we going to be doing it in smaller doses so you can have two or three like you normally would when you're out for a few drinks? So I don't know. All I can say is that from the business investment side, I mean, this is why those regulations matter so much, right? If you're dictating where people consume it and how it's licensed, I mean, those are the things that business owners have to think through. At the end of the day, I'm also keenly aware, though, that BC is a very different market than other places. I think our customers are a bit more mature, shall we say, or a bit more aware of cannabis, and people have made their decisions decades ago, right, where they're going to be consuming. So people who can co-consume cannabis and alcohol will probably continue to co-consume cannabis and alcohol regardless of where it comes from, right? And regardless of whether it's an edible or something you smoke, I think they're still going to do it. So when I tell our members around the provinces, you may be looking at a 5% shift in volumes, but in your particular market, you may be looking at absolutely nothing at all.
Okay.
Lots of questions and very few answers there for you.
Yeah, there are. We're definitely in uncharted waters.
100%.
And they're making it up as they go along. One of the things that bothers me a lot is the fact that if you are owner of a retail liquor store, mm-hmm. and you're also applying for a cannabis store, you have to have complete separation between the two stores. You can't even have a little slot,
yeah.
like a mailbox slot that yeah. you can put your slide money through or whatever. You can't have a back door for staff only between the liquor store and the cannabis store. For safety, security, you have to go through the front door.
Yeah.
And I just find I'm hoping that the government will relax those barriers over time, because out of safety and security, I hope that'll happen.
I completely agree. I mean, we'd advocated, obviously, that, you know, if you want to get this out there quickly, just sell it inside of a government or a private liquor store, right? That's 1,670 private stores, a couple hundred government stores, boom, you're in 900 licensed locations around the province that are already age-controlled, that people already have extensive experience dealing with controlled substances. For various reasons, government chose not to go that way, but it is weird. You are allowed to have like a common vestibule or a foyer with a liquor store, but customers cannot have any access at all. And as you said, even if you happen to have the same back office where you just want to drop the cash in, you literally have to take it outside the store or go back into the other one. You can't even share it around there. Like, that just seems like it's a solution in search of a problem, right? Like, that doesn't really make any particular sense from a business perspective. You're just making people spend more money on renovating their businesses for no actual real reason.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I remember during the last provincial election campaign, CKNW had a interview/debate amongst the party leaders. And at that debate, they were asked the question about retailing cannabis. And Premier Christy Clark said, no, you should not sell two vices in the same store. Those were her words, that you should have a cannabis store, should be separate from a liquor store. You shouldn't have both in the same store. Whereas the leader of the NDP, opposition leader at the time, John Horrigan, said, no, we believe that cannabis could be sold in government liquor stores and private liquor stores. But then something happened. The understanding I have is the health officials came in and said, no, you've got to have a separation of the two vices, if you want to use Christy Clark's words. Yeah. And that's how we got to the model we're at today.
Yeah. And a part of that is that unfortunate framing of calling them both vices, right? I mean, it's, I think you're stigmatizing both cannabis and alcohol in ways that are kind of unfair, right? And
I totally agree with you. I think that Christy Clark did us a disservice on that one.
On that one, I would agree, right? And I think that when it comes to your cannabis consumption, alcohol consumption, if government is concerned about these things, then there's education campaigns you can do to deal with it. But also, like, you can trust British Columbians. I mean, how stupid do we think people are,
yeah.
right? Like, you know, just because I, you know, they're on in the adjacent shelves or something, it doesn't mean I'm going to be driven to go and consume both of them in a way that's irresponsible. I can literally walk across the street or next door to purchase whatever I want, right? And there's no controls over the quantity of, you know, vodka bottles. I can go in and purchase 50 bottles of vodka right now, right? And consume them all if I want to, right? I would die, right? But it would be definitely an ill-advised decision. But
you'd
if you're
be
allowed,
well, you'd be well preserved.
It would be pickled for sure. But if you're allowed to do things like that, what are we talking about, right? But all of it goes back to that, yeah, calling it a vice, like that's not consistent with the intent of legalization, or the you know, the history of how we got to this moment, right? Or how cannabis is actually consumed by the majority of people, right?
Yeah. Now moving forward, you've got a conference coming up in October.
Yeah, very exciting.
It's at the Hyatt Hotel. Mm-hmm. And
October 21st, come on down.
Well, I'll be there. Don't worry, I'll be there. The conferences, as I understand it, promote a dialogue between government, the industry, and yeah. You have the industry, from the industry, you have owners of liquor stores, liquor primary license establishments, which are bars, pubs, nightclubs, as well as liquor stores.
Yeah, and hotel liquor
and hotel licensees. Yep. And do you have anything exciting happening this year?
Yeah, well, the whole idea of it is it's called the British Columbia Liquor Conference, and we created it 4 years ago because it didn't exist, essentially. And we get a couple hundred folks, I should say, coming out to it. And we work really hard to get folks from government there because our members never get access to the general manager of our regulator, the LCRB, or they never get to actually talk to the executive director of LDB Wholesale about their problems, and they don't necessarily know where these guys are going. So the idea is that if you put all of the licensees in a room and there's education about trends and about liquor liability and issues that you need to know to run your business effectively, but you're also getting access to people that you don't normally get a chance to talk to, and you start to maybe understand some of their actual concerns or how they're thinking things through, right? So you, instead of just saying, oh, these liquor laws are stupid, you can actually find out what government is thinking about it and give government some very direct feedback on how those rules impact your business. So the whole idea is to promote that dialogue while we also try and increase the professionalization of our industry, right, by having workshops about digital marketing and social media. I mean, it's easy to spend an ocean of money on social media, right? Which what is the ROI on that? Why are you doing that? Why do you have to do it? You know, what is digital marketing actually? So we're running a workshop where you can bring in your plans, talk about your business with a social media expert and get free advice from them on how you would actually do it, why you would do it, things like that. I'm quite sure I don't need to tell a liquor retailer how to retail, like in the very basic sense. But helping them understand what's coming next and the different product selections, all that stuff makes more sense. And, you know, your questions about the impact of cannabis legalization are astute because our closing panel of the day is a series of experts exactly on that topic. What is the impact on the beverage industry? How do you need to reposition your business? Because the fundamental framework for controlled substances is changing, right? There's a new one that's legal on the market, and that's going to cause some sort of disruption or some impact on your business. So how do you adapt? Right. And that's what we're trying to help people with. And then hopefully government will stick around for those sessions as well so they can hear people's questions, right? And understand where their regulatory framework is maybe being a bit overcautious and not encouraging investment in innovation in the way that we would like to see it.
Yeah. I must admit, I've attended your conferences for years, and I think they're terrific.
Oh, thanks, Bert. I'll give you that $20 later.
Yeah. And I think that they promote a dialogue between the government, and I'm glad to see the government people there. And I find it interesting that the government people come to your conferences, but so many cannabis conferences that I've gone to, there's an absence of government people there.
Oh, that's too bad.
And I think it's a mistake. And over the years leading up to legalization, there were a lot of cannabis conferences. And the people who have the most experience in retailing cannabis were there, but the government people weren't there listening to them. And these people who were operating in the gray market and the black market, well, the reality is they were to retailing cannabis what NASA is to space. They know how to do it. And But I think I like about your conference is the general manager of the liquor branch, the liquor distribution branch. Those folks come, they participate, and they're available for discussion. We might not always agree with what they say.
Oh, for sure.
And
we disagree about tons, right? But yeah. I mean, I feel like we have worked pretty hard, especially in the 5.5 years I've been doing this, to develop productive partnerships with government. I don't care if there's conflict, right? And if we don't agree in a particular issue, but I think it's a vital part of our job to have open and honest conversations with them. And I work hard to build those relationships so I can just call them up and say, hey, this is going to be a problem or not going to be a problem, or they can bounce ideas off us, or if they're trying to understand something, they can have a confidential conversation with us. And also they would feel comfortable in front of our members, right? Some of them are certainly very passionate, right? But no one is sitting there yelling at them or anything. And I don't know why government would not go to some other conferences. I think any bureaucrats or any senior level officials should spend some time in doing that, because it's the only way you can actually do your job effectively. It's the same reason I go on the road every summer and travel around and see different licensees and, you know, the Kootenays and the Okanagan and Northern BC, et cetera. Because I think I know what I'm doing, but I might not, right? Yeah. And if I get there into your pub and you tell me that this actually matters instead of that, well, that influences how we advocate with government. And also I can give them direct feedback. I can say, I just spoke to 100 licensees and this is the biggest problem that they're facing.
Now, when you do your road trip mm-hmm. and you travel from Vancouver to the Kelowna, let's say up to Prince George,
yeah.
up to Fort St. John,
and over
to Atlin or whatever you end up, or go to get hydrized.
Yeah.
Is there a different feeling in the different areas of the province around this whole issue of cannabis, liquor issues?
Yeah.
Give us a feel for what that looks like.
Well, I would say there's a few things that are different. I mean, first off, like the business framework in the liquor industry is different. The best thing you can do to help out a pub in the summer in Vancouver is to have a sunny day, right? The patio is going to be filled. On a sunny day in northern BC, the liquor stores are selling like crazy. No one's in the pubs. They go to the pubs in the winter. In the summer, they grab, you know, something from the store and they head to the camp, or they go on the water, or they're having a barbecue in their backyard, right? It's a very the business environment is flipped. I feel like in northern British Columbia, some of the more rural areas, they tend to be a bit more critical of government regulations. And I think government is overreaching sometimes. They're like, well, why don't you just do this, right? Because they're used to a framework where they're buying off their friend if it was cannabis, right? Like they have, know people who have grow ops or something. And it's a very normal, integrated part of their culture. And they don't see any of the risks from it or any of the health concerns that may exist. They just see, well, that seems like a legit business. Why aren't we working with those people more directly? Why is it so hard for them to get a license and all that kind of stuff? And I think you see definitely difference in economies of scale, right? And product selection and stuff like that in different stores. And sometimes you'll see differences in, BC is huge, right? I mean, it's like massively huge. People talk of Prince George being northern BC. That is just southeast of central BC. So to get up into northern areas, like the distribution chain is much, much longer for people, right? So it's more expensive to get goods in there. And the product selection changes sometimes because it's just not available, right? But I would also say the attitudes in through the Kootenays. I mean, you want to talk to cannabis, people in the cannabis industry, just go to Nelson, right? I mean, I don't know a lot about Nelson's economy. But it certainly is strange to me when you look at the industries that are there that town is doing as well as it is. So it's obvious that they have deep connections in the cannabis industry. And those guys are at the forefront in a lot of ways about product selection and about ideas how to retail and distribution, right? And government probably should have had more conversations with some of those people, right? Yeah. And tried to find easier ways to bring them in the fold instead of over-regulating them. And then the island's different as well, right? I mean, they have similar kind of issues. But, yeah, the feeling is it's different everywhere you go in the province about it.
Yeah. Do you have any more regional meetings set up?
I'll be in the island for a quick tour in mid-late September. I'm still sorting out the exact dates, but that'll be it for this year, because as much as possible, I like to do these on my motorcycle, and it starts to get cold in October, and I become a wimp. So also we get quite busy with our conference and other issues that are going on. So, and when the legislature's back in session as well, I'll be spending some time in Victoria harassing. And the most charming way possible, our elected officials to help them convince them that that I'm right about everything.
Yeah, that's right. And when does the legislature go back into session? October?
It's in October. Yeah, I forget the exact date, but yeah, mid-October, something like that, early mid-October.
Now, you don't get involved in the federal election at all, or as an organization, or just stay back and just watch what happens?
Yeah, I mean, we do have federal issues, things like excise taxes, right? Basically, anything that influences the price of a liquor product, and with cannabis, that's obviously been a big federal push. We worked with Health Canada and other, you know, the other folks in government with to advocate for our recommendations. But because the licensing and a lot of issues are handled provincially, and liquor is always a massively provincial issue, I'd say it's 95% or 99% provincial. Yeah, it was like the escalator tax that you probably heard about on the federal side. We had a couple meetings there. And I'm always looking for an excuse to go to Ottawa, though. I mean, I did live there for a decade, right? So it's fun. You get to go and see how some of your old friends and political assistants, now our chief of staff to ministers and whatnot, they're doing quite well.
But you don't want to go in the winter months.
Hells no. It's cold.
Unless you want to go skating on the canal.
Yeah, which, not to tell people not to do it, but I've done it. It's not that much fun. It's really, really cold. It has to be really cold for the canal to freeze.
That's right. It does. Jeff, thanks for coming in this morning.
Oh, it's my
this
absolute afternoon, pleasure.
Whatever it is. What time is it anyway?
Who knows?
Yeah. But anyway, thanks for coming in. We got us a chat. We look forward to hearing from you. And we'd like to have you come back on the show to talk to us about some other issues going on later on the year, perhaps after your summit.
Be my pleasure.
After your meeting at the Hyatt Hotel and some other issues, and keep us posted with respect to the review going on and the policy changes that may happen to finally allow licensee-to-licensee sales, which I'm a big fan of.
Fingers crossed.
And also a wholesale price for licensees, because to me, if you're spending millions of dollars or thousands of dollars on liquor purchases, you should get a break.
I completely agree. Thanks so much for your time, Bert. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to License to Chill with your host, Bert Hick. This podcast is recorded live at Studio 710 in downtown Vancouver and produced by Jade Maple. For more information, check out risingtideconsultants.ca.